Thrill Me.
This show is part of the Thrill Me Podcast Network. Experience more on Facebook and YouTube.
Hey, what's going on? This is Thomas Nicholas. Welcome to the Mehmet Total Groove with your host, Tombstone, Josh.
Got it.
Sweet, man.
Please agree to the terms and sign your soul away.
That's right, man. I got you now, dude. You're officially locked in.
Awesome.
All right, man. Joining me on the show this week, welcome to the Metal Groove, just a drummer. I'm super appreciative of him hanging out with me. Super talented guy. The way I found out about you is kind of funny. I'm going to dive into that in a second. But welcome to the show, drummer of the awesome band Symptom Fate, Mr. Alex Rivas. What's up, my friend?
What up, buddy? Glad to be here.
Cool, man. How you doing over there? Where are you calling from today?
I'm out of Los Angeles, California, Burbank area, actually.
Oh, legit rock star. Yeah.
Well, I used to live in Hollywood. That was the crazy party time in the early 20s. And I actually moved out here from Illinois when I was 20 years old. Go to school for music, and then I met the right people right off the bat, and then started touring around in bands and moseying my way across the country. And unfortunately, and somewhat fortunately, I'm still in this city. So
nice. You got to be doing something right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cool. So I don't know if you remember this. I just want to get it out the way up front. But the way I became aware of you, or the way we made friends, is I can't remember what site it was, but somebody posted. Maybe the new wave of metal. Somebody posted that, and it was like a video of you guys. And I was being a troll. I was being an asshole. I was like, I don't know about that. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on this band. And you could have buried my ass. You could have buried me right there. But you were a cool guy. You reached out. You said, hey, man, give us a shot. And I did. And I checked your guys' stuff out. And you guys are awesome, man. So that was on me. I was trying to be a troll. But look at this. I made a friend, and now you're on the show. So, hey, it worked out for the best, right?
There we go. Where are you based out of?
Charleston, South Carolina.
All right. That's cool. That's exactly. A good city, man.
Yeah. I'm pretty biased. We got a pretty cool city over here, man. I ain't gonna lie.
That's a good state too, actually. It's you guys got a lot of nice countryside to drive through in the summertime, especially.
Yeah, we got the best of both worlds because we have that country in the upstate, but we have some pretty cool beaches down here too, man.
Yep.
You beach kid?
I don't go out to the beach that often, to be honest. No,
I hear you. I understand that.
I'd rather go like roam through the mountains or go camping out in the desert with friends. That's
perfect, man. Nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's chill stuff right there, man. I like that. I appreciate that.
Oh yeah.
So let's talk about your before we dive into drumming, because that's what I want to talk to you about, because you're such an awesome drummer. Let's talk about your band, Tempting Fate. First of all, awesome name, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's something that every single one of us, I think, do on a daily basis.
100%. Yeah.
You know, you gotta have a little fun with life and tempt your fate from time to time and do some risky, stupid shit. But that's where all the good stories come from, isn't it?
That's exactly right, man. So for people that's not familiar with your band, how would you describe your sound?
I mean, it's a mix between metalcore and there is some stuff, especially with like the Illusions album. All of that album was in F sharp standard, so there's a lot of deathcore inspiration from that. There's a lot of components from bands like Suicide Silence.
And
a lot of stuff from that album. And then I mean, we've done various little covers here and there. We did a fucking cover of Old Town Road a few years back, right when that came out. Just out of shits and giggles and just trying to have fun with stuff. So
across the board,
that's kind of where it is. A lot of the stuff we've been working on recently and throwing ideas back and forth with is getting back into a lot of a heavier realm, a lot more of a deathcore side of things.
Nice, man. That's cool, dude. So, all right, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing the music you guys have coming up with. I want to talk a little bit about the band later, but let's talk drums, man, because that's the main course right there, man, is drumming. like I said earlier, you're an awesome drummer. I seen, I think it was some solo, was it you posted on Facebook recently? I think, what was it? There's like a funny story behind it. Like some bands didn't want you to do a solo, but you threw it in there every night.
Yeah. Well, I didn't throw it in every night. This was in 2019, I think it was, on one of the last tours we did before all the world went to shit with all the COVID stuff and flipped the world upside down. But I made a bet with one of the other bands on that bill, Currents. I'm sure you're probably familiar with them.
Yeah.
And they had this big ass drum vault case. And where the kick drum was, they're like, well, all right, you probably be able to fit in there. So I'd try and like squeeze my tiny ass in there. And before I got to it, and I'm like, all right, let's make a bet. If I can fit in here, I get a fucking 30-second solo or 45-second solo somewhere in the intermission in one of our songs on that set that night. And I ended up fitting in there. They ended up locking my ass in there for a minute. And it was funny. It was a little slightly claustrophobic upon such, you know, knowing that I kind of figured that they were going to latch it and just let me sit in there for a little bit. But we kind of got in a little trouble that night because opening acts apparently are not allowed to do drum solos or anything like that. Story of our life. That wasn't the first time that we got in trouble on that tour, and it wasn't the last time.
That's cool, man. Hey, breaking barriers. Man, what kind of unwritten law is you can't have a drum solo? Weak. That's weak, my friend.
Right? That's what I'm talking about.
Hey,
and so I think even stuff with, you know, there's other things on there where certain tours, you got to, you know, of course, you got to price match your merch and everything. And sometimes the headliner's prices are a little outrageous. So I take it upon myself to save up all my drum heads that I go through prior to tour. And I'll sit there and I'll spray paint them all. And instead of trying to sell them, fuck it, dude. After every single night, I'll throw one or two out to the crowd.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to catch something off stage
and then exactly
have a memento to take home and be like, yo, dude, put it up on your wall. Uh-huh. I was there, saw this shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's cool, man. So how did you get started with drumming? Let's go way back in the day. Talk about how you got started. Do you play any other instruments, first off?
Play a little guitar. That's pretty much about it. Drumming wise, that started, probably when I was like 4 or 5 years old. My parents are both musicians. They both play guitar. My dad plays a little of everything. So I grew up having guitars, a couple basses, a few keyboards, and a drum set in my basement when I was a kid. And I was always immediately gravitated towards the drum set. So, I mean, there's old videos and pictures of me and my dad jamming, where he'd have a guitar, drumming a few basic chord patterns. And I'm just sitting back on the drums at like 5 years of age, just trying to tap along and, you know, it became actually something that I wanted to pursue. It became a complete takeover of my life after that. And then, once middle school came into play, I was all about it. I went and did the whole school route of everything with like concert band and all that shit.
Wow.
Cool. You know, playing pep rallies.
Classically trained, huh?
Yeah. Doing the pep rallies. And then that went into, in high school, I ended up doing marching band for a couple years.
Sweet.
So, that was kind of my excuse in my school days to get out of normal school shit. So the music room was always my escape. If I wanted to ditch a class, it's like, I don't want to be here. I'm just going to go to the music room and see what class is going on over there and just sit in.
Right, man. Nice. So what kind of stuff were you listening to back in the day? And that, did that kind of model the way you're playing when, or influence you any?
It kind of did, you know. I mean, my parents both being musicians, I had a vast canvas of music to pick from that they had at my disposable fingertips, whether it be on vinyl or CDs. They started getting me like single cassettes when I was a kid. I remember having the old Smells Like Teen Spirit single cassette by Nirvana. Wow. And that was I think I probably had that when I was like 6 years old or something like that. Okay. And to the point, like the whole cassette thing where you sit and listen to your local college radio station, mm-hmm. wait for a song to come on, or call into your college radio station, be like, hey, can I hear this song? And then once it comes on, you sit there and you play it and you record the thing and make your own mixtapes. And it started with a lot of classic rock, huge Styx fan, big Chicago fan. Chicago's one of my favorite bands. It's my dad's favorite band. Shit, everything like AC/DC, Foreigner, Aerosmith,
sweet,
all of that back in the day. And then it just perpetually got heavier and heavier as the years went on. And then you know, I dove into the thrash stuff with Anthrax and Megadeth and Metallica. And then that got heavier and heavier. And then once Slipknot came around and Korn, when I was in this is like middle school when that all came around, and that just flipped everything upside down. And from there on out, that was it. And then it went into a lot of Lamb of God after that in high school.
Wow.
Huge, huge fan of Lamb of God. And then then it got a little more experimental with a little more proggy stuff with like Dream Theater.
Jeez.
Went back and dove for like 2 years straight into their whole catalog of everything that I had missed. And you know, I still listen to a lot of crazy heavy shit today. But I also listen to a lot of country music these days. Actually.
Okay.
So it's quite all over the place, but of course it's got to be the rockin' country, you know. It's got to have that good solid 2 and 4 behind it, you know.
I hear you, man. So do you remember I asked this to everybody just because it's I think it's a fun way to gauge where you started, but do you remember either the first drummer you saw, you were like, holy shit, I want to do that, or do you remember the first song you learned or wanted to learn?
You know, it's funny you ask that. I can't tell you an exact artist or drummer that I saw that kind of really locked it in. But my dad and I, we used to have a couple summer festivals that would come through our town in Illinois. We had one in 4th of July called Rib Fest in Naperville, okay. Illinois. And then there's another one called The Last Fling. That was Labor Day weekend, and he ended up becoming part of the local television cable access channel, the Wayne's World kind of deal.
No way. Everything.
And we would borrow a couple cameras from them, and we'd go out and he would sit there and send emails out to all the bands that were playing, their management, and be like, hey, is it cool if we, you know, sit down for like 5-10 minutes and ask a couple questions? We had a generic stock list of like 8 to 10 questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, I didn't look at much of it other than the fact that, oh, cool, I get to be backstage and watch the show side stage, you know? But there were so many artists over the years that I saw by being able to be a part of that. And I think that was a big component that pushed me. I will say Ray Luzier, who's currently with Korn.
Yeah.
And when I saw him, he was playing with David Lee Roth Band.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw him play, I think I was like 14 years old or something like that. Blew me away with all the stick tricks and everything like that. Yeah. His showmanship is just phenomenal. It's mm-hmm. not a lot of people that can get to that level. And I was in awe by that. Didn't get the interview with David Lee Roth, but I was able to sit down with him for a couple minutes and shoot the shit. And he took me after the show while his drum tech was dismantling his kit and took me up there on stage and showed me his setup and everything. And he was actually a dude that came from, somewhere in Philly or in somewhere in PA.
Okay.
And then he moved out to LA to go to school at MI. So he kind of instilled that mentality of, okay, maybe I actually want to look into going to school with this. Gotcha. So I, you know, I followed the same footsteps and moved out to California, went to school, and, you know, I got to give him a big thanks on that for at least just sparking that idea to pursue it to that degree.
Yeah, man, props to him, man. That's awesome. That's a good story too. Yeah, he's a phenomenal drummer, and a lot of people do forget that the showmanship of it is a big element, because you can lay down a sick beat and you can sit in that pocket, but if you can entertain while you're doing it, that just gravitates more people to you and people start paying more attention. So that's awesome, man. That is
cool. People pay for a ticket. They want to see a show. So you got to give them a show. Like, you know, nobody wants to sit there and watch somebody thinking about what their next meal is or having that waiting for the bus look on their face while they're on stage playing. You know, what you put in is what you're going to get out of it, is the way I've always looked at it. So the more craziness and energy you throw in on stage, then that's the more it's going to show up on the floor. And the bigger the pit's going to get.
Hey, so you're talking about earlier, you grew up with instruments in the house. I want to know about that first kit. What was the first kit you played on? And then what was the first kit you got yourself?
That's great. The first kit is, my dad had, it was a no name. I think it was like a Sears kit.
Okay.
And the badge on it just said Star. but it was a Red Sparkle, four piece kick, snare, one up, one down. And I slowly got into taking things a lot more seriously. And then, I think it was like 15 or 16. When my parents, I started working probably earlier than legal when I was 15. But I started saving up money for drum gear, and I knew what I wanted to spend my money on. And, I knew the kit that I wanted to get. And, actually with like, a, I think it was like a birthday present, my parents ended up doing like half with me on it. And I got a Pearl Export.
Nice.
In a gunmetal gray. Mm-hmm. Still have that kit today. Actually, I'm planning on taking that one out of our band's lockout and setting that up. And I work for a production company where we do we build stages and lights and audio rigs. So the whole other side of the industry, the behind the scenes industry. And since we got space at the warehouse, I'm going to actually set that kit up for the first time in I don't know how many years.
Sweet.
And be able to rock out on that.
Cool, man.
It should be cool.
I bet you it still sounds phenomenal too, man. Those old
sure
school pictures are great.
I got new heads for it to get outfitted on it whenever I get it set up. But dude, that thing, it was always a beast. I bought it when it was just the a five piece, a 22 kick, a 14 snare, 12, 13, and then a 16 floor. I ended up going and over the next couple of years, you know, I was like 16, 17. I just kept adding and adding on. So I got the 10 inch rack, and then I moved the 13 inch floor down as like, or the 13 inch rack tom down as like a higher floor tom.
Okay.
And then I ended up getting the 8 inch tom as well. So I was able to get three up and two down. And then I always had it like where that 10 inch tom was right in the center of the snare.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do the offset or anything. And I was kind of going after the whole Joey Jordison setup
that
he had during the, it was during the Iowa.
Okay.
Time frame. I was kind of mirroring that off of that. And then, symbol wise setup with that, I kind of started going and, trying to emulate what Chris Adler was doing with his cymbal setup during like the Ashes of the Wake era.
Mm-hmm. Right on, man. So do you have a preference of cymbal? That's actually where I was going next, man. So you queued that up perfectly.
Yeah, I've always been a Sabian fan. Been a Sabian fan since I can remember. That was the first like real premium brand symbol that I bought for myself was an 18-inch AA Rock Crash. Okay. Which I got that one because Vinnie Paul always used to use two of those up front.
Nice.
With Pantera and Damage Plan, he always used those up there. I can't remember if he ended up using the 18 AA Rocks with his Hell Yeah setup or not. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was the first one. And then you know, now I have plethora of Sabians, whether it's a setup for the AAs, a setup of AAXs, a setup of HHXs, which I've been loving the HHXs these days. Okay. They're still punchy, they're still bright, but they're just
they don't
pierce as much as the AAX and the AAs do.
Gotcha. I understand. You have a China? I can't remember if I hear a China in there occasionally.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then it's been a lot of the Chinas, honestly, I have to go back to the Chad Smith Holy China, especially especially playing live. That thing just pierces, man. It's a force to be reckoned with.
The great sound, man. And then the last one, I guess kind of kit gear wise, what's your stick preference?
Oh, stick preference. I've always kind of been a ProMark fan. Okay. Always been on that team. And I think that started out from getting a pair of Portnoy's signature series back when I was like, you know, 15 years old or some shit like that. And I always loved that thinner yet longer stick. I have switched over since those were a nylon tip, and I switched over to a wood tip stick now. I use the 747s.
Okay.
Because they have a little bit of extra length on them. I don't know. I don't know exactly why it is, but that I jumped to that stick, but it's always felt comfortable playing. Okay. And especially like that wooden acorn tip on that is just fucking, I can't say enough about it. It works perfect for every application that I would need it to.
Gotcha, man. So in the theory of your playing, would you consider yourself a heavy hitter, a finesse, or do you kind of meet that middle somewhere?
Oh, I hit those suckers like they owe me money, man. I hit them like they owe me money all the damn time.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and that was actually one thing when I started with music school, just the dynamic aspect of everything. Mm-hmm. And then being able to judge your velocity and how hard you're hitting to the room that you're playing. And I started to understand that a little bit better because, you know, prior to that, it's like, sorry, dude, like these cymbals are going to be ringing at like 170 decibels. And I hope you got your earplugs on.
I hear you, man. That's awesome. So last thing we'll talk about before we move on, double kick. Do you do two kicks or do you do a pedal? Double pedal.
I do run a double pedal. I do run a double pedal. I am a huge fan of the Pro Eliminator. I do have a pair of the Demon Drive direct drive double pedals. Those are cool. Those ones sit at home on my kit in my room. I got a Pro Reference Pure kit here. This one, that's the one that doesn't go outside. It doesn't see sunlight. It doesn't go out and see shows because I don't want it to get all fucked up and scratched up or anything like that. But I do have a couple pairs of the Pro Eliminators, man. And those things, the chain drive, by the way.
Sweet.
Not bell drive. Yeah. Never been a fan of the bell drive.
Me neither.
But dude, those pedals, they're smooth. You can dial them in real easily. And they're workhorses, and they can take a beating and they will still be standing there exactly the way that you set them up prior to.
Cool, man. Are you a heel up or a heel down kind of guy?
Heel up.
Sweet, man. Heel nice.
I do some of the swivel when it comes to doing really fast stuff. or doubles like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd love to be able to go out and go out on the road with a second kick drum. The only problem is space and pulling that shit on and off stage in a prompt time. Because I love the aesthetic of it. Just that symmetry is just, there's something that's, you're a drummer, you know, it just looks badass. Yeah. Whether you use it or not, it still looks
it looks cool. Yeah, it does, man. I remember seeing Sum 41 last year. And I feel like I normally, when I see him online, it's a broke down kind of smaller kind of maybe dive bar kind of gig. But I feel like whenever I seen him here in Myrtle Beach, yeah, he had the double kick out there and he was wailing, man. It was awesome. It was cool. Nice. It strikes you at first. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They have a different drummer now, Zumo, who's been with them a couple years now, but he's a phenomenal drummer.
Oh, yeah. From he was with the Street Drum Corps prior to. He was one of the founding members of that, I think, actually.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. Man. So let's talk pre-show rituals. Do you have like a go-to warm-up, or do you just chill? Like, what's your, before jumping in there, do you need to warm up any? Like, some people like to do some rudiments and stuff before they go on. Do you have anything like that?
I'll normally try and whether it's a pad or a pillow or some shit, just sit and just get the blood flowing, get the limbs loosened up a little bit. Always pre-show for me is a little, it's hard to find the time unless we are actually backlining our rig, because I'm always in charge of making sure everything's on and off stage, trailer's getting packed, everything's, you know, I'm probably the last person that you're going to see go to the merch booth. Which I mean, I'd rather be playing around, pulling cases around and shoving them in the back of a trailer anyways. That's just how weird I am with that. It's like, all right, cool, this is my like little piece of time to be able to, you know, play Tetris and wind down after a show. And then prior to a show, dude, it's pandemonium, just making sure everything's set and ready to rock. But we always try to go and do a round of shots with everybody on the bus and everything beforehand. So we try to find a little bit of time to have a moment of camaraderie.
Yeah.
But in terms of warming up, just maybe 5-10 minutes hitting a pad or a pillow. A lot, I'll actually sprint back and forth outside the venue, maybe like 2 or 3 minutes before going in.
Yeah.
Just back and forth, just to get that blood circulating, especially in the legs.
So I got you, man. Yeah, you're classically trained, dude. You've been doing this a long time, so you know what's going on. You know your body. That's cool, man. I hear that.
I wish I had like the whole, you know, hour with a dressing room to be able to sit there and go through like a whole rudimental setup and everything and like actually professionally get warmed up, but you know, you don't always get that option.
I got you. Now I'm gonna throw a bunch of random questions at you if you're ready, sir.
Yeah, let's do it, buddy.
Has there been a city that you've gone to on tour where you were like maybe down a little bit, or maybe not, you didn't know what to expect, and then you get there and the crowd blew you away, or maybe was just an awesome show you weren't expecting? Like, what's been one of your favorite places you've been to on tour?
Favorite places?
If South Carolina doesn't make the list, let's get it on there so we can show you a good time, my friend.
That's true. You know what? Honestly, I always look forward to going through Texas. Those crowds are wicked. Let's see what else. Anytime going through Chicago, just because I'll have my family out and friends and shit like that. So just, you know, hometown for me is always super, super cool. Shit, I'm trying to think about what else. I mean, dude, honestly, every crowd is gonna fucking bring it no matter what.
Gotcha. You guys put out a ton of energy, so I'm sure you get it back.
Oh yeah. One thing for me, I like to, if we have the time that afternoon, once we get all our gear situated and in the venue and everything, and we got a few hours before going on stage, I like to just go like roam around the city wherever I am. Like, that's my bass player, Matt, and I will We'll just go for a walk somewhere and just go roam around and sightsee or any kind of dumb little shit like that. That's always fun.
Would you be able to do a top five drummers?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, cool. Top five. I've already mentioned a few of them already. Those of you who have been paying attention can probably guess who might be making that fucking list. Joey Jordison, of course. Ray Luzier. Mm-hmm. Mike Portnoy. Chris Adler. That dude changed my fucking complete outlook on playing drums. Yeah. I'm gonna say the Rev as number five, but I'm also gonna give a notable mention to Vinnie Paul, and then also a notable mention to Morgan Rose as well.
Okay, nice, man. That's a great list, man. And I kind of can see that in your playing, the way you play. I can see where you pick a little bit from each one of those guys. That's awesome, man. Joey Jordison, oh my gosh, dude. Man, rest in peace to him. Rest in peace to the Rev. But geez, those two were phenomenal.
They were, man. Like, and that's, and what's crazy about that is that both those guys actually did a shit ton of writing for the band. They weren't just a drummer out there. Same with Morgan Rose as well. Yeah, he does a lot of writing. Portnoy did a lot of lyrical writing, actually, for Dream Theater as well.
Wow. So cool, man. Yeah, that's very awesome.
Very well versed. Drummers, I guess you could say.
Sweet, man. So what's the best band you've ever seen live?
Oof. Best band I've ever seen live. You know what? It's going to be I don't know if it's the best band I've ever seen live, but the most memorable show I've ever seen was Slayer in, 2008, I think it was 2008 or 2009, when they did the Mayhem tour.
Oh, okay.
It was It was Manson and then Slayer on the main stage. I think Killswitch was also on the main stage, and I think Bullet for My Valentine. Yeah, it was Bullet for My Valentine, Killswitch, Manson, and Slayer.
Wow, what a line. Jeez,
that show kicked my ass. And, I don't know if that's the best show, but that was probably one of the most memorable shows that, especially at a younger age, you know what I mean? Like, it just started shit off.
I hear you, man. That's awesome, dude. So, we like to talk movies sometimes. This network I'm a part of likes to talk movies. So on this show, I like to ask, do you have a favorite movie based around music, whether it's based on a true story or just some made up thing? What's your go-to if you're looking for a movie that involves music or a band?
Oh, of course. Come on. Everybody's got to have one. Yeah. For me, it's going to be Airheads, man.
Yes. There we go. That's what I'm talking
Airheads
about.
Going back to the whole cassette thing, I never grew up being able to, I didn't have a TV in my room or anything, but I did have Airheads on VHS, and I decided to go and take a cassette tape one time and watch the movie and record the audio of it. So then when I was laying in bed at night, when I was a little kid, I could pop the tape in and sit there and just listen to the audio like an audio book, but I already knew what the movie looked like. So I can close my eyes and play it in my head.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's a classic. That's all. I always go back to that movie, man. It's awesome. Okay, my next question was going to be if you weren't a drummer, but I feel like it's in your blood. It's been instilled in your life. It's a part of you. You know what I mean? So I'm going to go this route. Do you have any other hobbies besides drumming?
Oh, geez. Actual hobbies?
Or stuff you're into. Like, I mean, like I talk about it all the time. There's an element of dork, nerd. Like you were saying earlier when we were talking about my stuff back here, there's a kid in every one of us. What is your go-to, your getaway?
As a little kid, if I had the time if I took the time to be able to, I wouldn't mind getting back into building Legos, to be honest.
I know.
That was a big part of my childhood. And I I still sign up for the Lego email list. Okay. And I see some of these guys make these monstrosities on Instagram and stuff like that. I'm like, Jesus, man, I wish I had that kind of free time and expendable budget to be able to go and spend all this money on these parts, because I'm sure they were expensive back then, and I'm sure they're still probably expensive. Yeah. hobby wise though, aside that I actually do, which that might inspire me to go buy a Lego set one of these days.
There we go. I'm gonna be checking your Instagram for whatever you make, man.
I'll make sure I tag you in the post.
All do right? it.
I always love tinkering on vehicles, man. That's always a lot of fun. I have a business as an independent contractor where I work for a lighting house here in LA. We get to build these crazy big truss structures and all these crazy lighting design rigs and everything. That's kind of somewhat of a hobby, because I actually really enjoy doing that. You know, it's somewhat constructive. It's like, it's kind of like playing with Legos, but just on a really big adult scale. I love doing that. It's always cool to see those kind of builds come to life too, especially, you know, you're throwing all this crazy shit up in the air, building these structures that have to support certain amounts of weight, and, you know, it's flying over people or something like that on motors. There's zero room for error. So I have a lot of fun actually, like, trying to calculate how everything's going to go, and even down to the point of, like, packing a truck, just playing Tetris with road cases. Like, that's, I don't know, it's weird, but I still get a smile on my face by doing
it. It's important. It's so fun. Yeah, it's like you feel accomplished if you get everything in there just right, man. It's cool. It's a game. Yep. And go figure, the guy that's a drummer likes to be hands-on with everything. So it all makes sense in the end. You know what I mean?
Right.
Cool. So the song we're going to be playing by Tempting Fate is Bottom Feeder. Showcases you on the drums. Absolutely killing it. Before we wrap up and get out of here, tell us about other projects you have going on. Tell us what could be coming up in the future for Tempting Fate, and where people can find your stuff.
Dope. You can find any of the Tempting Fate stuff on Instagram. You can hit us up, Facebook, send us a message, drop us a line. I don't know exactly how much merch we still have out there. That would be a question for, I need to touch base with my singer Corey on that one. I know we still have some stuff out there. We're working on bouncing some new song ideas around with one another. I know it's been a few years that we've kind of been on hiatus. We've all kind of taken the time to do our own little thing, because, you know, I work for a lighting company. I got another business where I buy and sell clothes. Our bass player, Matt, I think he's about 2 years in on the camera union out here in LA. And then guitar player Shane, he's got a business up in the Bay Area working on interior repairs and cosmetic repairs on cars. And then Corey, our singer, he's got a business up in Bay Area as well, doing wheel repair and painting rims up in Bay Area as well. They still live in their hometown. Cool. So we've all kind of taken a little bit of time to just focus on ourselves, you know. Yeah. It's been a minute since we've done that, but there's a lot of pent up aggression and desire to make some gnarly ass heavy music. So
right on.
There will be some new stuff coming soon. Hopefully we can get out on the road whenever that all drops to do a support run for that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I also play drums in a band called Gun Driver, which we were completely reformatting that band. That used to be like a 80s, early 80s hard rock band. We did a couple runs with Michael Shanker from UFO and Scorpions, nice. Which was awesome to be able to, you know, play the same stage as that legendary motherfucker every night. but we are completely reformatting, going into a thrash metal format.
Right.
So we've been working on new tunes. I don't know when it's going to come out, but I think we got 7 or 8 songs kind of roughly done with pre-production right now. And then we'll probably do another session within the next few months and probably round out another 7 or 8 and then trim those ones down and see what makes the cut, and an album from them out at some point in time. Again, you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook. And then there's another band out here in LA that it's like a 90s alt rock band called Left of the Slash. And that one, actually, it's funny. One of my buddies was supposed to have that gig, but he was so bogged down by so many other bands that he was playing with at the time, where he called me up. He's like, "Yeah, dude, I got a rock band that I just can't fit into my schedule. You want to do it? I think you'd be perfect for it." I'm like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And I hit it off great with Steven, the singer and guitar player in that band. He's a great dude. So we've been working on some new tunes for that. Again, unfortunately, don't have any idea when it's going to come out. But there's a lot of in progress kind of stuff rolling right now.
Hey, that's good. That's good, man. That's cool, man. Well, I super appreciate you hanging out with me. You're the absolute best. This rock star from the Midwest, actually, man. You're a sweetheart of a guy, dude. I've always appreciated that. You've always been cool with me. A nice dude, man, and a phenomenal drummer. So the song we're going to be playing, like I said, is Bottom Feeder. It's going to kick you right in the face, just like people like to be kicked in the face. And it's a great time, man. I appreciate you so much.
Hell yeah, man. I thank you so much, Josh. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. Hey, take care. Stay safe on the West Coast, man. Stay metal.
Will do. You better stay metal. Yeah.